Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So the Media Project is underway once again. You have the publisher, the professor, and the editor here, Ira Fussfeld of the Daily the Daily Freeman in Kingston.
Yes, remember that? Kingston, New York.
Kingston, New York.
Wonderful invented thing. In 1871.
That's a great thing. The newspaper is the Kingston.
Yes,
is much
mime invented in 1948.
Wasn't it the capital?
First capital of the state of New York.
Right.
That other voice there is the professor, Dr. Ellen Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. How'd you do?
How'd you do?
And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. We're very happy for you to be with us today as we speak of the big news being a news corporation apparently splitting itself up. The Murdoch Empire is dividing. It reminds me of the comic books when Superman divided himself into Superman Red and Superman Blue.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was really big.
Must have been after my time.
Well, yes, most of what's happened in America has been after your time, but that's all right.
Good, Rex. You'll pay for it.
Thank you very much. But anyway.
Just remember, as my brother Lewis always said, you started it.
Are you the older twin?
I am.
Yeah.
5 minutes.
You can tell. The firstborn is always handful, right? So here's the deal. At News Corp, they're taking the newspaper division, which is the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post and what else? And they're making that a separate company from everything else that is Murdoch, that is, including Fox Broadcasting and the movie studios and all that kind of stuff.
Why are they doing that?
I'll tell you. Thank you very much.
Funny you should ask.
So this analyst figured out that for the year that is just now ending, the entertainment division had $26 billion in revenues, and the publishing division had $8 billion in revenues. Well, still, you say the publishing division, that's great, those are revenue. But the publishing division's profit was only $200 million or so, which is a margin of 2.5%. A profit margin of only 2.5%, while the entertainment division's margin was about 15%, and they're saying that can just skyrocket if it's not weighted down by the bad reputation of the print
people
part.
In other words, Rex, I think what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that people aren't investing the way they should in the entertainment division because they don't like what the newspaper stands for, or
they don't think there's enough money coming out of it. They're worried that it's going to hold down their profit. I don't know that it has to do with
But I have a personal issue I want to just bring up here.
I'm shocked to hear that.
You know, I go to all of these, you know, movies, and some of them are very good, and it says Fox Searchlight, da-da-da-da, whatever. And I say, oh, God, I'm here supporting Rupert Murdoch's fortune.
Yep.
Kills me.
But you know, seriously, it has nothing to do with the ideology.
You think that wasn't serious?
Oh, yes. Well, that has nothing to do with the ideology. In other words, if I heard you right, you think that people are not supportive of the newspaper stocks because they don't like the newspapers or the point of view.
Well, not only that, but they don't like their reputation for corrupting officials
don't think that that's accurate is because the television stations, Fox News Channel, which is part of the entertainment division and holds similarly
right-wing
views, they're very supportive because they're making money. The reason that they're not as happy with the newspaper division is because a number of the newspapers are losing money, and then there is this overall feeling that the newspaper industry is in a nosedive, so it's not a good investment. We know that the New York Post loses a lot of money. One of the analysts says that the London Times loses a lot of money, which Murdoch owns. They also own the Wall Street Journal, which is believed to be making money. money, but the report that we have says that the newspaper losses may be as much as $250 million a year.
Well, of course, this is reflective of what you guys are always moaning about on this program, which is that newspapers aren't doing well.
Well, if newspapers are so bad, why is Warren Buffett, why did he just buy 5 dozen more newspapers 2 weeks ago? Huh?
Well, I have an idea.
Well, all right.
He's very old, older than I am. And, you know, he's a guy who's interested in influencing public opinion.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter that they're losing money.
I have a different theory.
Okay, what's yours?
I think he's buying primarily community newspapers, newspapers like IRA's paper, and I think there's a future there.
Niche. This is my niche.
They have a toehold in their foothold, a sound place in their community, where I think if they're not overly burdened by debt, which is what has killed so many newspaper companies, they can survive and thrive in the very competitive information environment. You think so?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat that. I think it's somewhat that he is. It's a buyer's market, so the prices are good. I think it's an acknowledgement that newspapers do have a digital future, and the thing so that the potential of increased profits are there. The thing that I'd be looking at with Warren Buffett is how much of a profit is he going to be looking for newspapers, and is he going to reinvest in staff so that those community newspapers will not suffer the same fate that larger papers and many community papers have, which is losing reporters and thus losing content.
So. Right. When you think about the great success of newspapers in the past, it was in the previous generation, they were owned by individuals in the communities. And so you're right, they did reinvest.
Yeah, I read a piece somewhere, and I damn if I can remember where, but it was somebody who was saying that the future of newspapers would be a lot brighter now if it went back to the individual owners.
Sure.
Because of the reason that you just cite. But I don't think that's ever going to happen. Unless they're very small newspapers.
I don't know. You know, I've seen some community newspapers who were owned by real scoundrels. I live near one. You know, that's just too much of a generalization.
Is it the scoundrel because you don't care for the kind of journalism that they have or et cetera, or is he a scoundrel because of the way he runs the business?
Both.
Both. Okay, well, I guess they exist.
Now, we all know what people really buy their newspapers for.
What's that?
Crosswords.
Crosswords.
I was guessing.
Well, you know, the producer of today's program, Ian Pickus, is never without a crossword in his hand.
Well, and he's going to be smarter when he's your age than you are.
Driving. So,
He walks around with it because it's often been seen as one of the major ways to combat Alzheimer's.
Absolutely. It's a great thing. Well, so I think that there's something to this. The New York Times, which is a pretty well-run company in many respects, has decided that their crosswords online are not even going to be premium. That is, right now they're part of the package that you get. If you're a subscriber, you can get everything online. You know, you can get the digital service. I'm a subscriber to the Sunday New York Times, and so I get the iPad version and everything else.
Yeah.
The crosswords now are going to be a special extra charge. They're going to cost another $40 a year just to get the crosswords. That's how popular the crosswords are.
It's, you know, I do crosswords rarely, but that seems to be one of those things that I wouldn't want to do on a computer. Would you pay to get the crossword puzzles, or is it because the iPad makes it easier to do? Or just
I think that's right. Yeah. I think that the touchscreens make it really
My
easy.
Wife, the lovely Roselle, plays a lot of Scrabble online.
Scrabble I play.
Yeah.
Crossword puzzles, though, I don't...
It's all the same kind of intellectual stuff.
But it is interesting that for years what has sustained newspapers has been the whole package. If you don't like the crosswords, you have the comics, or you have the local sports, or you have whatever it is. And that's the kind of thing that is being disaggregated, really. I mean, that's what you can get pieces of through search or through social media. And I think this is actually what the Times is doing here suggests that they're getting separate revenue from the crosswords from the people who only want that, who don't want the whole New York Times package.
Well, it's interesting because you think about it for a second. People have a thing about social meaning to this stuff. You say, how many times have you heard somebody say, did you see that crossword puzzle in Monday's paper or Tuesday's paper. So in other words, it's like going to a movie. Everybody thought movies were killed. But the fact is that we all go to movies because it's a common reference. It's a community builder. You see what I mean?
I think so.
I don't think so.
I used to do the TV Guide crossword puzzle. It was very easy until I stopped really being part of the pop culture. Now I can't even do that one.
Wait a second, Ira. You watch more crappy television than anybody I know. Every time you walk into our office, you're talking about how proud you are of your son.
Yes.
Who is a producer of one of those, some of those terrible programs.
Yes.
Well, no, not terrible, but programs.
Not the ones that he does.
No, not the ones he does. Yes. They're different. But you seem to be able to tell me about every single juvenile television show that's on.
I am well read. I don't watch them, but I do know what's going on. It seems to me part of the job, don't you think?
I think
so. You need to know a little about a lot.
And by the way, Ira, who sent you this picture?
It's a lovely picture of Paul Newman that he's showing up. My twin brother.
It's actually a picture of Chris Christie, and on it says, from my twin brother, Ira. Yes, and it says, Chris, is that true? Is that you?
Well, I think if my picture is still on the WAMC website, or if you want to go to my blog at thedailyfreeman.com, you can see whether or not Alan is exaggerating.
How much?
About 200 pounds worth.
At least 200 pounds worth.
Yeah, I would say, absolutely. It's too bad you can't hold it up the microphone so people can see it and they can make their own decisions.
There may come a point in time. I know that WAMC, for example, does do simulcasting.
Everything that we
do live. Not on this program. Whereas the Daily Freeman and the Times Union does live streaming all the time.
You guys are great.
I know.
Thank you very
much. If we don't say so ourselves.
So now, here's one of the controversies in the media from the past few days. And tell me if you think this is plagiarism or not. Jonah Lehrer, who is a science writer, he's written this terrific bestseller, Imagine How Creativity Works. He's written a lot in The New Yorker.
Is he a relative of any other famous Lehrer?
Is he?
We don't know.
Son of? He's only 30 years old.
So he
has been accused of recycling material from himself. Basically, he's plagiarizing himself.
It's a shanda, I tell you.
It's a what?
Shanda, it's a Yiddish word for a great shame.
Oh.
No, but I don't really mean it. I just wanted to use the word because I don't believe it. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, do you think this is a bad thing?
Okay, so he writes a New Yorker piece.
Right.
And in the New Yorker piece, he basically plagiarizes from himself. That's the accusation, right?
It draws upon work that he's published. It's his book draws upon work, stuff that he's published previously in shorter form in the New Yorker, for example.
Well, I write two columns a week. And I don't want anybody going and finding out if I repeated myself. And it wasn't because I lifted something, but because we columnists tend to have a point of view and we tend to repeat it.
And it's very hard for you to come up with original ideas.
Well, that's right, Rex.
No, I'm very glad to hear that. I don't think this is such a big deal.
Me neither. This is crap.
I mean, I suppose it would be one thing. I think that if he had put in the front of his book, you know, portions of this have previously appeared in The New Yorker.
Well, how many columnists have written books that are compilations? I don't know if that's exactly the same thing, but people use their stuff all over. I mean, what do they want? If the man has an opinion and then uses that opinion or that phrase in another piece that he writes—
Let's give it a rest. There's the newspaper police going around periodical police trying to figure this thing gotcha out. It's ridiculous.
Now, this is different from, there have been two instances in recent days of journalists who actually did fabricate quotes and names. One was an intern for the Wall Street Journal who was immediately fired. One was a reporter for the weekly newspapers in Fairfield County, Connecticut that are owned by my company, Hearst Corp. Similarly, had been making up stuff and their stuff has been removed. What happens is you end up having to remove their work from your website. So there's actually an incomplete picture of what's going on because you don't really know exactly what is real and what wasn't.
Exactly.
So plagiarism is a major problem. I should say it's a major sin, but it is an occasional problem. And I think what Jonah Lehrer has done is not similar to that.
I agree with you. And by the way, while we're on the subject of the Hearst Corporation, I want to pass on this program's condolences to the Hearst family and to you, Rex, because you've lost a major scion at the company.
We have the father of my publisher. My publisher is George R. Hearst III. His father, George Hearst Jr., 84, chairman of the board of Hearst Corporation, died in California last week.
And what relation was he to William Randolph?
He was the grandson. He's the oldest of the grandchildren of William Randolph Hearst. the George who is the publisher in Albany is the great-grandson of William Randolph Hearst, yes.
Interesting. Has that, any movie ever been written, done about
any of the Hearst? There is speculation that, that the movie Citizen Kane was about him, but no one has ever proved that, right?
Right. Right you are.
It's, you know, the way that the Hearst Corporation is set up, he didn't actually run the company. There's a CEO, William Randolph Hearst, in his will actually set up a provision so that the family would run the charitable arm and they could be a part of the company, but the control of the company devolved into the hands of a self-perpetuating board of directors.
And why did he do that? Did he suspect his own family was not capable of doing this?
You know, some of the members of the family do actually show up for work every day.
Your publisher does.
My publisher does. His brother runs the real estate holdings in the West, out in California. They have a lot of real estate. Ranch and
but this George Hearst who just passed,
yes,
he was the chairman of the board despite the injunction against running things, wasn't
he? But as I say, there's a CEO who actually runs the company. And the chairman of the board, he has a role, but it is, you know how boards are. You have a board that...
oh, boy, do I ever.
And you have a board chair, but you are B-O-R-E-D. The CEO of this... I believe you're speaking to
right.
one of your board
one
members
of the board members right here taking notes.
But I did want to ask you this. CEOs have one major problem, don't they?
Overinflated egos.
Go with the...
they can be fired.
Oh, that one.
And who fires CEOs?
Board.
The board of which George Hearst, now departed, was the chair.
Yes, and that did happen in my company several years ago.
Uh-huh.
That is correct.
So that CEO is always looking over his shoulder or her shoulder to find out where sovereignty resides, right?
True. Yes.
Okay, I'm done now.
Something to be said for that. So anyway, he was quite a remarkable fellow, old George Hearst.
Did you meet him?
A rancher. Yes, I mistook him. I was out at the Hearst Ranch for an editors and publishers event many years ago. And I said to, I came up on my publisher, George Hearst, and said, you know, George, we got lost as we were driving from one side of the ranch to the other. We were going to a party at the dairy barn where they had a mariachi band and everything.
Mm, sure.
I said, this nice ranch hand in the pickup truck guided us here. He said, that ranch hand over there? I said, yeah. He said, that's my father.
Wow.
But he was a real rancher.
That's
he was a
good,
guy.
So
who,
this was the ranch, not the castle.
Yes, the ranch is down below the castle.
Oh, I see.
It's the land surrounding the castle.
Yeah.
Quite exciting. Anyway, so, hey, here's public radio news. Car Talk is going into reruns, right?
Yes, that's true.
It's a pretty big deal, isn't it? I mean,
yes,
this
it
is the number one program on NPR.
And we already heard from Ira Glass, who
yes.
has written an opinion piece, who says, come on, boys, let's get new programming in here. We don't have to recycle old stuff.
What do you think about that? That was frankly my first thought. That it, as popular as the program is, why can't we come up with new things? What do you think?
Well, let's put it this way. Let's assume it's popular now and it's going to be popular. You and Rex run your newspapers with your hypocritical, you know, looking at NPR. I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
If it was still working, would you still be using it?
Yeah, and I wasn't asking it critically. I was just wondering what the thinking was. It is clearly a popular program, but at what point in time do the war... I mean, Andy Rooney died. He was. You've heard about that. Yes. His column.
That wasn't necessary.
His syndicated column is still distributed by Tribune Media Services as the best of. I didn't want to run those columns anymore. I
mean, now,
what about all the comic strips,
yeah.
which have been recycled?
We moved Peanuts to the classified section. Actually,
I love Peanuts.
Well, it's.
Are they running the best of Peanuts, or are they?
No, it just says Peanuts.
Peanuts.
Yes, it is because there are a few people who still cling to the old comic strips that they loved in their youth when they were
like
in their,
Gasoline
in their 50s.
Alley.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And
I love Gasoline Alley.
It's gone now, I'm afraid.
No, I read it in the Daily News.
Is that right?
Correct.
Amazing.
That's why I buy the
But again, is that are those reruns or do they have another artist other than
no,
the original?
No, they are new.
They're new.
Yeah.
Well,
see,
different.
Blondie is new. They have new plots.
When Tommy
Blondie.
Dorsey died, they still had a Tommy Dorsey band.
Yeah.
I'm trying to give you
a
generational.
There's still maybe.
Right. Guy Lombardo, he died, took New Year's Eve with him.
But
now Dick Clark did the same.
Willed it to Dick Clark.
Yes.
But the Peanuts is a good example because we do still run those. It's just that we've taken them out of prominence. We don't run them on Sundays anymore.
And I use it all the time.
They're the old ones. They're stuff. Yeah, do you?
I use it. The political analogy is that that the Supreme Court has moved the goal line, just like Lucy moved the football.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some real basic wisdom there.
Hmm. Interesting. So, hey, did you guys see the debut of Newsroom, the TV show on HBO?
I did. Did you?
Yeah.
Now, what'd you think?
I liked it a lot. I thought there was great drama there. It seemed...
It's Aaron Sorkin.
Obviously, yes.
I'm hesitant to say I watch it because Alan claims I watch everything.
But you do watch
it. It is appointment viewing, and I do have a DVR.
A lot of this stuff comes up after 8 o'clock at night. By which time
I have
asleep.
Three initials for you, DVR.
DVR. Yes. You know what that means?
Yes.
Digital.
Well, anyway,
variable.
It was. I thought it was. I was entertained by it, but yes. It was a typical Aaron Sorkin production with very long speeches and very much a preachy quality to it.
Yeah.
And not being a product of a television newsroom as opposed to a newspaper newsroom. I didn't recognize that newsroom real well, but I don't know if the contingencies of putting on a live show were accurately mirrored by that program.
It would be very interesting if we had a network producer in the room here to talk to us about the verisimilitude.
Well, you guys probably remember that for about 25 years, I did television every night. So I'm not unfamiliar to newsrooms.
But unfortunately, you didn't watch the program, so you have no comparison.
That is the issue.
Yeah, that's the issue. So therein lies your homework. It does get repeated during the day at daylight hours.
2.1 million viewers for the debut of Newsroom. Now, that is the real-time viewers, so you can't really track
that. Is
that
good or bad?
Well, they think that's pretty good. That's, I mean, by comparison of Veep, the new HBO show, that attracted 1.4 million. But it's not as big as when Boardwalk Empire premiered on HBO. That was double. It was 4.8 million viewers.
I love that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But your point is that the first episode airing doesn't mean that millions more may or may not watch it.
As you and I did, right?
Yeah.
That's I time shifted also, which is a.
It's great to know that you guys have jobs in which you can sort of take some time off and watch television. Mm.
Well, you could take a little time off.
I cannot. I'm working from the minute I get up to the minute I go to sleep.
I have a reason for you to watch this program.
Why?
Sam Wardiston is one of the featured players.
There you go.
I know.
And he's your hero. You did tell me once.
And my friend.
And you told me once, tell me if I'm telling this story wrong, that you interviewed him someplace on the second story of some building, and the two of you walked down, and some woman said to you, "Who's that person with Alan?"
That's an old joke. Older than I am.
Well, so that's like the old Jackie Vernon joke about the Pope and Jackie Vernon's friend comes on.
Who's
the
Rosenberg? Yeah,
who's that guy next to who's that guy next to Sig Sackowitz? Well, anyway,
he was very good
in that program.
No, that didn't happen. Oh. And he is a great friend of this radio station, public radio.
Yes, I thought he was quite good.
I won't hear anything bad about him.
No, I liked him in that program.
Absolutely.
He had a whimsical, godlike quality to him.
So there is, you remember the journalist Anthony Shadid of the New York Times, who unfortunately died while he was reporting on the uprising in Syria.
Sure.
And he had to walk across the mountains, and he had an allergy to horses, and he apparently inhaled too much of it, and he actually died. Now Anthony Shadid's brother has basically attacked the New York Times and said they killed him because they made him go into battle. Other family members are disputing this, saying, these foreign correspondents only go into battle coverage when they really want to, that nobody actually forces them to do this. It's a really interesting insight.
Sounds like a cheap
shot. It was not a brother. It was a cousin.
I'm sorry, cousin.
Everything that I'd
heard.
A
brother wouldn't do it.
The colleagues of this reporter who actually carried him across the border after he died, all said at the time, if I recall, how this is, this is his life, this is what he wanted to do. So,
cheap shot. Yeah.
It does show, I think, the real dedication of these reporters to this kind of reporting.
Sure.
We sometimes forget how much dedication they have to bring us this news from the battlefront, but it certainly enriches our understanding of world events, and we're really grateful for the bravery that occasionally leads to tragedy such as this. So
it's true.
Well,
and on a lighter note, Ira, make sure that you take this picture.
Yes, I
will.
My wife recognizes me.
It's a wonderful thing. Thanks for joining us this week on the Media Project. We'll see you next week.
Such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's on ting-a-ling-a-ling city desk.
Hold the press, hold the press. Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.